IRS on the Road, value-based parenting and life balance ideas from world-traveling family coaches. Here's Richard and Linda Iyer.
Hello and welcome back to IRS on the Road. We're so happy to be with you today. It's late autumn where we are. I'm not sure where it is.
Mid-October, best time of the year. Oh my gosh, it's so beautiful in the mountains.
It is. It's gorgeous. The sun's shining through all the golden leaves, and we're expecting a moose to show up any minute, and it's going to be great.
We've got our youngest son, Eli, and his wife, Julie, kind of living with us here for a while they're getting ready to move back to New York City. And so these walls, which are normally quiet and serene, have been loud and noisy and vibrant the last few days.
It's so fun. We are progressing along as you are in life, no matter where you are. But we did have a fun visit from a boyfriend of one of our grandchildren, whom we all like, and so does she, and we'll see what happens with that.
We got a little thing going of which of our grandkids will be the next one to get engaged, and there's probably about five potential contenders right now. We're cheering them all on.
We are cheering them on, and wow, we had a raucous ping pong game. It's really fun.
Well, you should know about the ping pong table, because I got it figured out that Linda needs a sport to aid her her new knee needs to have physical therapy. And it's one thing to do all these exercises, but I just got it in my mind that ping pong, you're moving around, your hand to eye is getting better. And I just think you're going to be great at it, honey. I put it right in our great room of our house in Park City, and it's a beautiful piece of furniture. It's not a typical ping pong table.
It's a beautiful ping pong table, but honestly, I had no prior notice of this. We went to a friend's house. He saw this beautiful ping pong table. The friend said, "You know, my wife and I play ping pong every night before we go to bed. And she is so coordinated now. She was just nothing before, and now she's fabulous." And so he just got it in his brain that is what we needed for me. And so here we go.
But it's fitting into everything.
It does not fit in at all.
No, but it's like we're going to use it for Thanksgiving. We'll have an extra table. We'll be able to seat like 15 people around that thing.
We are going to use it for Thanksgiving. And then you're going to have to move two of your cars out of the garage. It's going to have to go down to the garage. There is no place else.
All right. We'll talk about that
later. All right.
Okay. So, you know, this is so interesting and fun for us to kind of have a theme now for IRS on the Road. This whole business, this whole online course we're doing of how to live the second half of life. And if we're totally candid, Linda, one of the main motivations we're doing this course is to get our own ducks in a row, to get our own strategy there for how we really want to live this, in our case, the second half of the second half of our lives. And this month, the month of October, we're really drilling down and diving in to the mental, how to live the second half of life mentally. And we don't just mean how to keep yourself sharp and alert and cognitive and so on. We also mean, what are your mindsets? What are the paradigms or the mental ways of viewing your life and the world that really make the most sense now in your life? And last week, those of you that tuned in, we talked about how the lust for control, the mindset for control, trying to control everything, really begins to work against us as we get a little older. And we want to find a higher, more spiritual paradigm. And we talked about the concept of serendipity, where you have a plan and you try to control yourself and the things you can control, but you're always constantly aware and sagacious and sensitive to things around you, and you find serendipities, you find things better than the things which you were seeking. And we just love that word. And this week, this third week really of October, we're talking about the deceiver of ownership, the mindset of ownership. And maybe just to put all three of these deceivers in perspective, and then we'll drill down on the middle one on serendipity. But let's just read you a very brief sort of indictment of what we call the three deceivers of ownership, independence, and control.
Yeah, we all own a lot of stuff, but this does put it in perspective. The distorted lens of ownership causes us to perceive the world as a competition, to constantly compare and judge, and to develop the habits of selfishness. The mistaken notice of independence puts us alone against the world and develops a brittle facade of pride, which hides the vulnerability that could help us to better love and be loved. And lastly, the presumptuous perception of control makes us swim against the flow of opportunities and become less sensitive to others, even if it deprives us of both faith and spontaneity.
So we're devoting this October to sort of essentially saying, hey, control, ownership, and independence were good paradigms for the first half of life because we were building our lives and we were accumulating and we were trying to establish things. But in the second half, we need a higher, more spiritual paradigm, and serendipity replaces the idea of control. And today we're going to talk about this whole business of ownership and how we became so caught up with it, and why we can leave it and move to a little bit of a higher place in the second half of life.
You know, the right to own property is a key underpinning of a democracy and free enterprise. This right had to be fought for and won in order to free people from tyrants and monarchy. The American Revolution is the only one example of the endless struggle for autonomy and free enterprise.
So clearly, ownership is a powerful economic term. In an economic sense, ownership is a prerequisite for responsibility. People aren't as likely to take good care of things unless they own them. Generally, we take better care of our own cars than we do of rental cars. And we take vacation rental is more likely to be abused than your own house. But like control, ownership becomes deceptive and destructive when it's taken too far. When an ownership mentality takes over our thinking, we forget that ownership is temporary. We're just using things which pass through our hands, things which come from or are part of the earth, things we may have a deed for, but they ultimately belong to God or to humanity or to the universe. And when that ownership starts coming over in the sense of we own our children or we own our companies or we own the people we work with or we own, it kind of blends with control and puts us in a position where we're not as aware of other people's needs, and we become wrapped up in our own sense of what we can control and what we can own.
Well, it really does. When we think about when we were young, you were building our lives together. We were renting, then owning, fixing a house. Wallpaper was so important. There were so many, paint was so important. Things were so important. And now we've moved to a different part of life where we really realize that we can't control anything, or at least we ourselves, but nothing else. If you think of the notion of ownership as the trunk of a tree, what are the branches that grow? Branches of envy and jealousy sprout as we are in contact with those who have more things or better things than we do. Branches of condescension or superiority shoot up as we see those who have less. Branches of greed and covetousness begin to grow as we think about all that we wish we had. Branches of pride germinate as we think about what we have or about having more of it than someone else.
And Linda, you'll be pleased to know I did a little Instagram post as part of this course the other day, and I was up in the mountains right above us that we're looking about now, and I found two trees, and they were perfect for this metaphor because one was kind of a scruffy little tree, and it had branches, but they were kind of ugly and withered and so on. And they were these branches that can grow if we adopt too deep of an attitude of ownership all the time. And they were the very branches you mentioned. And then right by it was this beautiful fir tree, straight and tall and clean. And the branches that grow on it, the stewardship tree, are, and we're revealing this alternative to ownership is stewardship. And on the stewardship tree, you've got branches of cooperation and win-win and being just as happy for someone else's accomplishment as you would be for your own, and wanting others to do well and wanting to facilitate them doing well and working together. It's just a beautiful tree.
It's so amazing the difference that makes when we own things. Well, obviously we have to take care of them, but if we think of them, just we're stewards over our stuff. I'm sitting in our kitchen looking at our stuff. We're not going to have this forever. It's going to just pass through our hands, but we do need to take care of it. But if we think of it as just we're taking care of it and not just this is ours and I don't want anyone else to put their finger on it.
Yeah, exactly. And now let's just back off for a minute though, Linda, and just let's give control, ownership, and independence a little credit and even acknowledge that they may constitute a useful phase or stage of life that most of us have to go through before we can progress beyond it. I mean, as parents, we certainly try to teach control, ownership, and independence to our children. We want our kids to be able to control their tempers, their appetites, and their use of their time. We want them to take responsibility for their own toys, their own clothes, their own schoolwork, and even their own friendships. And we want them to gradually grow more independent of us, more self-sufficient. So is it possible that we might want to help our children grow into control, ownership, and independence at the same time that we ourselves are trying to grow out of it or grow beyond it? Does that make sense?
Yeah, that is true. We have kids who are just, some of them are just starting life with a new child, with a new thing, a new life is new for them again. And then you go on to that and think, you know, ownership is wonderful, but stewardship is a lot more pleasant. Of course, this is possible and ultimately is the best way to think about control, ownership, and independence as a stage of life that can teach us a lot as we pass through it. As a grade in school in which we do our best before being promoted to the next level. Think of it as an elementary school of life that we don't want to carry over into the university of our adult life. Yeah, that's a good.
So let's get into the university. And in this case, this substitution, this shift, this transition from thinking about things with an ownership paradigm, which again carries with it all this pride and envy and jealousy and judgment, and instead shift to this beautiful thing of stewardship. Now, we get a lot of pushback on this when we talk about it, especially when we talk about it in business meetings. A lot of our speaking is to entrepreneurs and CEOs and so on, and it's easy to get them a little riled up to where they'll say, well, you know, ownership is what motivates everything. It's what makes the world go around. And if you don't believe me, look at a building that was apartments that's been condominiumized, and suddenly people can buy their unit and they own it instead of renting it. And suddenly the whole building looks better. They're taking better care of it. They're painting, they're repairing, they're putting flowers in the window boxes because they own it. And that's where the motivation is. And I guess the only pushback we could give on that pushback is to say, well, there might be one paradigm or situation where they take even better care of it than if they owned it. And that might be if God owned it. If you were living in God's building, you would take even better care of it. And that's really what we're saying here, that's the way to look at our lives, that something much bigger than us owns this earth and everything in it. And when we recognize that, we become stewards who enjoy all the motivations and even more of them than ownership, but who also have the humility and the cooperation and the sensitivity and the empathy that comes with stewardship, but not with ownership.
Absolutely. Well, that gives you something to think about. Think about that for a moment while we take a brief break, because we have a lot more. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Iyer's on the Road. Here's Richard and Linda Iyer.
And we're back. We're talking kind of deep today, but I think people, hopefully you're resonating with what we're saying, because it was kind of an aha moment to us when we were younger. And then as we've grown into this second half of life, we've thought, wow, you know, this really is important. It's important to change your perspective.
And, you know, it's easy. Parts of it are easier as you get older. For example, compare parenting and grandparenting, right? When you're a parent and you've got little children and you are their guardian and their protector and their provider and their judge and jury and everything else.
You could even say you own them.
you sort of almost have to accept that full responsibility. Yeah. But even there, I think the parents are much better parents when they say, well, these are actually God's children, and right. They're my brothers and sisters. I just came to the earth a little before they did. It could have been reversed. They could be my parents. That'll make you think.
That would be scary.
But, you know, it is easier to think that way as a grandparent, I think, you know, because we don't control these grandchildren. We're sort of serendipity with them. We love them. We're free to just outpour love with them without a lot of the day-to-day responsibility. So we become more serendipitous, and we also become more like stewards. Like, you know, the parents are the real stewards of these kids. We're sort of consultant stewards. We can just shower them with love and try to listen to them and so on, and not have to have that other mentality. So
we own these kids, and they should do what we tell them to do.
But let's explore the word stewardship. It's a lot of people, when you just say stewardship, they're like, well, that's an old fashioned word, or they think of it as something in a royal, in a court, you know, the king's court, and he gives out, he owns all the land, and he gives little stewardships to the tenant farmers or something. So, but we want to make it a modern word. Let's think about it for a minute.
This old word dates back to the 11th century. Webster says it, quote, functioned as a job description denoting the office of a steward or manager of a large household, unquote, implying the watchful care of something we do not own. Webster added, quote, the careful and responsible management of something entrusted to one's care, unquote.
It's kind of a beautiful thought, isn't it? And more recently, the word has found, you know, it's been interesting to watch in business. There's now a term that's used somewhat freely. It's called the stewardship theory of management, where executives act as responsible stewards of the assets they control. Because they're in a company, they don't own these things, but becoming good stewardships of the assets they control. And we also hear a lot lately about environmental stewardship, right? Referring to our responsibility to protect the natural environment through conservation and sustainable practices and so on. So I think the word is kind of having a rebirth in business and ecology and so on. And that's a good thing.
Yeah, it is. And the word has long had a spiritual connotation. According to Wikipedia, quote, stewardship is a theological belief that humans are responsible for the world and should take care of it. In Jewish, Christian, and Muslim traditions, stewardship refers to the way time, talents, material possessions, or wealth are used or given for the service of God, unquote.
So that's where it really gets interesting, when we put a spiritual connotation on it. And stewardship becomes the understanding that we really own nothing and that things merely pass through us and pass through our lives. Things we can care for them, we can take responsibility for them, we can find joy in them. So we've come up with our own little definition of stewardship as it applies to becoming the alternative mindset where you throw out the mindset of ownership and adopt the mindset of stewardship. So here's our little definition.
A definition of stewardship, a paradigm in which one feels full responsibility for something he knows he is not fully deserving of, something both worked for and received, for which we feel dedication and passion, something which brings us a sense of magnificable and expanding gratitude and joy, which we want to share with others.
Magnifiable, that's a word for it.
Yeah, magnifiable.
We can magnify our joy and our gratitude. I mean, that's another key thing, isn't it? If you're an owner, if your whole mindset is ownership, you don't feel a lot of gratitude. It's like, hey, it's mine. I work for it. I own it. I deserve it because I, you know, got it. I accumulated it. I own it. And where's the gratitude and the joy that comes with gratitude in that attitude? Whereas if we see the things that we have, things or people or situations that we're in as gifts or as things, yes, we may have worked for them, but do we really deserve them? Probably not. I mean, they're so, just to be an American and to live in freedom and to have opportunity and to, I mean, these, Not everyone in the world, most people in the world do not have these things. Did we earn them? Do we deserve them? There's such a more accuracy and such a more sense of gratitude in saying they're blessings, they're gifts, they're stewardships, and we can therefore feel the joy of gratitude for them. And it's not a gratitude that bends toward pride and saying, I've got more than you. It's a gratitude that bends toward the feeling that you're humble because you've been given those things. It bends in the opposite. The ownership bends it in the one direction of pride and ego, and the stewardship bends it in the opposite direction of humility and gratitude.
And if you have that mindset, I like my word better, actually, magnificable.
That's a great word. Let's change that definition.
It really is. You can magnify it if that's your mindset. It changes everything.
So here's like a little one sentence summary.
It's a long sentence.
Yeah, kind of long.
Stewardship implies that we're taking care of what we are entrusted with by the true owner and for the greater good. In this attitude, we perceive responsibility, but neither greed nor pride can flourish. A stewardship paradigm brings with it a natural humility and gratitude that leads us toward happiness.
So there you go. We just want you to really ponder that. And if you get a chance to look at Instagram on, it's the Instagram called HTL Second Half. There's some little illustrations of this, including the two lovely trees that I found the other day. And that stewardship tree, branches are healthy, humility branches, reaching limbs of thanksgiving, and so on. So let's do a little kind of a final evaluation just to sort of seal the deal here, where we're basically saying, okay, let's compare ownership and stewardship. Let's compare these two different mindsets, two different worldviews, two different paradigms, and let's see which one is the best in terms of whether it's true or not, first of all. Secondly, whether it motivates us, which one motivates us the best. Third, which one promotes the most love. And fourth, which one produces the most happiness. We've said on a lot of occasions that maybe the three best ways to evaluate an attitude or a process or a practice or a mindset is on those three things. Is it true? Does it motivate? Does it cause love? And does it cause happiness? Okay.
Yeah, those are good measurements. Wow.
Okay, so let's I'll do the first one, truth, and then you do the motivation one, and then I get the love one, and you get the happiness one.
Okay.
So the truth one, let me be blunt. Ownership can be true economically, but stewardship is the greater truth emotionally and spiritually. It's true in a bigger way, a more caring way, a less selfish way. It is true in a higher awareness and perspective. Who wins the comparison on truth? Stewardship wins, ownership doesn't.
Right. How about motivation? There's no question that ownership is motivating, but it is a motivation that's varying and vulnerable because greed can consume itself and become exhausting rather than renewing. Stewardship's motivation is warmed and sustained by gratitude, where we see what we have as gifts beyond what we have worked for or deserved. Those with a stewardship mentality want more stewardship, just as owners want more ownership, but they want it less for pride and appearance and more for love and service and the common good. In stewardship, motivation is more peaceful. Nice.
More like peaceful. It's a more peaceful, more genuine kind of motivation. Okay, what about the criteria of love? Ownership turns one inward. The attitude, the paradigm, the concept, the belief in earned ownership that you don't need to be thankful for turns us inward. Stewardship, on the other hand, turns us outward. Stewardship opens opportunities for sharing and service, which bring feelings of love and appreciation, while ownership hoards and hides.
Ah, like it. Amazing. Happiness. The quality of results is potentially endless with ownership, but the happiness that comes with it follows the law of diminishing returns. Each time you get another something, it produces less satisfaction than the last time. Owning much can become tiresome. With stewardship, quality gradually becomes more important than quantity. And we learn that it's possible to be happy and content without being satisfied. Stewardship carries a deeper sense of joy than ownership because it couples with gratitude rather than with pride.
And we are in such an interesting place right now, Linda, because we are trying to consolidate and simplify our lives. We're trying to sell some things that we don't need or don't use or don't have good stewardship over anymore. And it is a very, I'm not saying we're great at it because it's something we're just trying to become better at, but it is interesting that it focuses you more on quality than quantity. It's not how much stuff I have. It's do I have the things that do I have stewardship of the things I really love and that make me happy?
Is this really important to me, or is it just stuff? We have so much stuff.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the things of life. You just collect stuff, and it's so important to clear that out and be surrounded by things that you really love.
Downsizing, making life simpler, making life more quality oriented is just a part of this mentality of stewardship. So we hope you've had some food for thought today. Please do think about it. We've got one more week in this month of October, and we're going to shift our attention to the third deceiver of independence, which is a deceiver. We're all interdependent and we're dependent on things much bigger than us. And that's where we'll focus on next week's Ayers on the Road.
There you go. Some things to chew on. Until then, we hope you'll join us again next time on Ayers on the Road. Bye-bye.